You're listening to live coverage on AM 770 KTTH Seattle. This is the press briefing for the Coronavirus Task Force,
which is almost instantaneous, which is going to be great. And remember this, we inherited bad tests. We really inherited bad tests. These are horrible tests. And it was broken. It was all broken. And we fixed it. And we're doing millions of tests. Sometimes we send out a test and it's not used. In many cases, it wasn't used. But we've worked with the states, and the testing has been pretty amazing, especially considering the fact that we inherited a very broken system. Jeff?
Mr. President, just to follow up on something you said before, are you considering a temporary ban on all domestic flights?
I am looking at hotspots. I am looking where flights are going into hotspots. Some of those flights I didn't like from the beginning, but closing up every single flight on every single airline, that's a very, very, very rough decision. But we are thinking about hotspots where you go from spot to spot, both hot. And we'll let you know fairly soon.
And what about rail travel?
A similar thing. We have trains going back and forth, and people don't think of trains, but we do a lot of transportation business. It's a very big decision to do that. And we're pretty late in the process from the standpoint that this is starting. You're going to start seeing, I think, over the next couple of weeks, you're going to start to see us hit a top and start coming down. So we'll make those decisions. Those are very, very big decisions from the standpoint of the future of our country, in a way, in the future of our country. We have to get our country back. We have to start moving again. We have to start working again. They're doing tests on airlines, very strong tests for getting on, getting off. They're doing tests on trains, getting on, getting off. But when you start closing up entire transportation systems and then opening them up, that's a very tough thing to do.
There continues to be a lot of public confusion about the use of masks. What is
the reuse? I love the sterilization of the masks. So, Ohio company, you can sterilize the N95. You can sterilize that mask for up to 20 times. Think of that, up to 20 times. We're throwing them out. And they're very expensive masks. They're throwing them out. And I kept saying, one of the first questions I asked to Dr. Fauci, I said, why aren't they sterilizing or cleaning the masks? Because I didn't, you know, was it my thing exactly when we first heard about this? Nobody else knew it either. And now we have a company, and I guess a number of companies, one in Ohio, a great one, that makes equipment where you can sterilize a mask up to 20 times, which is fantastic.
Well, okay. What about you or me? What about the public? Should we be wearing masks out? We've heard lots of different recommendations.
I don't believe, look, there's a big thing. A lot of people don't like it. Some people don't like it because you're taking it away from the medical professional. Some people don't like it for other reasons. I don't see where it hurts. And it doesn't have to be a mask. It can be a scarf. Scarf is highly recommended by the professionals. I don't see where it hurts. I think, if people wanted to do it, we don't want to do anything that's going to take masks. You're talking about a tremendous amount of masks when you do that. We don't want to take them away from our medical professionals, but I certainly don't see it hurting. But what I do see people doing now is using scarves. And I think in a certain way, depending on the fabric, I think in a certain way a scarf is better. It's actually better.
Mr. President,
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to ask you about social distancing and how it applies to religious organizations.
Yeah.
Some churches, as you know, have continued to hold services, even though you have advised people that they need to practice social distancing. There was a pastor of a megachurch in Florida over the weekend who held services that were attended by several hundred people. So my question to you is, should pastors be holding services in the middle of this pandemic? And even if they do, should Americans be going to church?
Well, my biggest disappointment is that churches can't meet in a time of need. You know, this is really a great time for churches to be together, for people to get together on a Sunday or whenever, any day, and meet. And yet, if you do that, if you do it close, you're really giving this invisible enemy a very big advantage. So it's the biggest, I think the single biggest disappointment is you can't. One of the reasons I said, wouldn't it be great just to pick a date, as you know, I called it aspirational, an aspirational date would be Easter. And I will tell you, it's very, very disappointing. But again, you get too close, and if somebody's sick, you're going to probably catch it. So you have to be very careful.
Did they catch it?
Yeah, just real quickly, Joe Biden's campaign came out with a statement today saying that Biden would be...
Did he write the statement, or did some PR person write it?
As far as I know, the campaign was wide awake, sir, and they sent out a statement that Joe Biden would be open to having a phone call with you to talk about the coronavirus pandemic.
That's okay, sure.
Would you take his call?
Oh, absolutely.
You would talk to him about it.
I'd like to speak to him, too. He should be able
together?
To... I always found him to be a nice guy. I don't know him very well, frankly, but I think he's probably a nice guy. No, if he'd like to call, I'd absolutely take his call. Okay? You could tell him.
Right? You have talked about the failings of your Obama administration in leaving you with empty shelves and no plans.
Well,
they have said you got rid of the pandemic office and the National Security Council.
Well, we didn't do that. That turned out to be a false story. Now you're starting to go,
are you working for CNN? I'm pointing out what they have said and what you have said.
Do it with Fox. Fox isn't so easy either. Don't kid yourself.
Mr. President.
Look, John, let me tell you something. You know that's a false story. What you just said is a false story. This doctor knows it better than anybody. No, but you shouldn't be repeating a story that you know is false. All right, who's next? Please, go ahead. In the back, you didn't get it.
Talk about Iran, and Iran is struggling with the virus.
It's very sad what's happening in Iran.
A broken economy. Under which conditions would you consider suspending, say, U.S. sanctions?
Well, look, we have to talk to them. I think we could work out a deal with Iran very quickly. All they have to do is call. I just think that, you know, they're proud people, and the leadership is proud. They're proud, like all of us. We're proud. You people are proud. They're having a hard time picking up the phone, or they're having a hard time setting up the meeting. But they could fix their country pretty easily. And we don't want hostility. But if they are hostile to us, they're going to regret it like they've never regretted anything before, as per today's statement. But all they have to do is call or have somebody call. You know, there are channels where we can deal very easily. Again, I think that John Kerry did a tremendous disservice. I think he violated the Logan Act 100%. That's what I think. And I think it made it tough for them because they were dealing with him for years. It was a terrible deal. All of that money, $150 billion plus cash, plane loads of cash, for a deal that was no good and was short term. Essentially, it was a short term deal. Who makes a deal for that kind of money and $1.8 billion in cash? I don't even know what that would look like. That would be, this room would have to be filled up five times with $100 bills, okay? Who makes a deal like this? And then on top of it, the deal's no good. All right, how about one or two more?
Mr. President,
Seattle police have reported a surge in calls about domestic violence. A number of groups have raised concerns.
About Mexican violence?
Domestic violence. A number of groups have raised concerns that the longer people are stuck at home, the more domestic violence cases there are going to be. Do you share those concerns, and what is being done to make sure...
It's another cost of not getting our country working. I mean, people are... Now, some people are getting along great. I've also had the exact opposite question. Families are coming together. They're actually coming together. They haven't talked for a long time, and now all of a sudden they're talking again. They're loving each other. So I've heard that, too. But I also have heard domestic violence much, you know, at a higher level. And drug use because of, in this case, they'd lose their jobs. They had a great job. They had a great life. They have a great family. All of a sudden, a husband's told that he doesn't have a job anymore and he's got no money. And that brings drugs into it. That brings suicide into it. It's a terrible thing. We have to get our country going again. We did the right thing. We had no choice. We did the right thing. Other countries tried to use the herd or the herd mentality. It's just, you know, something that doesn't work. If you look at, I mean, just to say, I heard Sweden gave it a shot and they saw things that were really frightening and they went immediately to shutting down the country. We did the right thing and we did it early. We did it early and we stopped other people from coming into our country early. But no, that's a cost. I've been talking about that. People say, what are you talking about? But you'll have that. You'll have domestic violence. You'll have violence. You'll have suicide. You'll have drug addiction. A lot of people are going to be lost We want to get this open as soon as we can. I mean, I'll be the happiest person. So will you. Everyone in this room. Happy when we get the word that this is the time and we have our common sense and they'll give me a decision or they'll be making certain statements, and I think I'll know how to interpret those statements very well. I'll be with Mike. I'll be with the task force. I'll be with a lot of very talented people, including the two people on stage with us. But I look forward. That'll be a great day. That'll be a great day. All right. How about one more, please?
Can I ask a question of Mr. Wolf? Can I ask a question for Mr. Wolf?
Sure.
What is the current contingency plan in ICE detention centers where cases of COVID-19 are already popping up? Some people have been released. Is there a contingency plan, and would you release the most vulnerable people like children and the elder?
Well, ICE looks at, on a case-by-case basis, even well before COVID, on looking at certain detention facilities and determining on a case-by-case basis if they do need to release individuals. And when we do that, we often put them on alternatives to detention as well. In the case of COVID, we're looking at vulnerable populations, and again, ICE is doing that in conjunction with CDC and other medical professionals. And in some cases, we do need to do that for the health and safety and the well-being of those detainees. But again, that's a case-by-case basis. We're not going to make any blanket statement that we're going to release individuals of whole groups at a time. So it's really important, and I've said it twice now, it's really a case-by-case basis, determining the health of that particular population or detainee. The facility they're in, different facilities have different capabilities, whether it's an ICE-owned facility or it's a contractor-owned facility. And so we're certainly doing that. We're doing that today. We've been doing that for the past several weeks.
Can you say how many have been released?
While you're out, could you talk about how tight that southern border is right now?
Absolutely. We have we continue to build miles of the wall every day. We're up to over 150, I believe. We're continuing to build new miles of wall, and a lot of folks ask about replacement wall or new miles, and it's a new capability on our southwest border that we haven't had before. And so whether you talk to the agents, the Border Patrol agents, they like that capability, they like that impedance and denial that it provides them, and it provides the ability for those agents to focus elsewhere on parts of the border that are very difficult to patrol, so we can use our resources in a different way. And so we see a lot of benefits from the border wall system, and again, that includes not only the physical infrastructure, but the cameras, the roads, the lightings, the fiber optic cables, and we're looking forward, and we're still well on our track, well on our mark to meet 450 miles by the end of the calendar year.
Chad Wolf from Department of Homeland Security.
From you while you're there's been concern among farmers about being able to get enough migrant labor to keep the food supply moving as we go into the harvest season. What are you doing to address that?
Well, at the direction of the Vice President in the task force, we are looking at a number of different options with the H-2A workers that you mentioned on how do we either extend the validity of their visa, or looking at a couple of different options. Nothing to announce here today, but again, at the direction of the President and the Vice President, we're looking at a variety of different options that I think we will have soon, and it'll be very beneficial.
But I am glad you asked that question, because we want the farmers, they've had this for years. We want the farmers to be able to get the people that have been working those farms for years, or we're not going to have farms. So they're going to come in, and they're going to be given a certain pass, and we're going to check them very, very closely, especially over the next month. Because remember, after a month or so, I think once this passes, we're not going to have to be, hopefully, worried too much about the virus. But we want them to come in. We're not closing the border so that we can't get any of those people to come in. They've been there for years and years, and I've given the commitment to the farmers they're going to continue to come, or we're not going to have any farmers. Okay? Yeah, one more question. Who are you with, by the way?
I'm with Voice of America. So we're not waving visa restrictions on immigrants.
Okay, who else, please?
In less than 24 hours, sir, two ships will arrive at Fort Everglades with people who are in.
We're looking at the two ships, yeah. Canada notified, a lot of Canadians, a lot of British on the ship, and they're coming to take the people that are on the ship back to their homeland. Canada's coming, UK is coming, and we have a lot of Americans. We have some people that are quite sick, and we're taking care of that. I'm speaking with the governor about that a lot, and it's a tough situation. It's a tough situation. You know, you can understand you have people that are sick on those ships, and states don't want to take. They have enough problems right now. They don't want to take them. But we have to, from a humane standpoint. We don't have a choice. It's like, I don't want to do that, but we have to. People are dying.
So they will be let into the country.
We're going to do something. We're going to do something. At a minimum, we're sending medical teams on board the ships. We're taking the Canadians off and giving them to Canadian authorities. They're going to bring them back home. The same thing with the UK. But we have to help the people. They're in big trouble, no matter where, no matter where they're from. Happen to be Americans, largely Americans. But whether they were or not, I mean, they're dying. So we have to do something. So and the governor knows that,
before
too.
Before being sent on?
Well, we're sending a lot of them home. Yeah, we're sending a lot of them home to their countries. But we'll be doing something, and we'll be announcing it. You'll see what we're doing. But we're also putting medical staff onto the ships so that we can... we have to take care of the people.
One more proposal.
Mr. President.
At the risk of getting chewed out again.
No, you won't.
Mr. President, there is a... The IRS is requiring people who don't normally file income tax to file a simple income tax return in order to get their $1,200 check. Is that the way it's going to be, or is there something you can do to...
I had heard that. Now, I don't know. Do you know that answer, Mike?
No, we're looking...
IRS issued some guidance.
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
We can get back.
Yeah, it's a process that they're working on. We'll get back to you as soon as we find out. All right, one more, please.
Mr. President, you spoke with President Bolsonaro of Brazil today.
I did. I spoke to him.
According to his Twitter.
He's great. He's a great guy, and he's doing a wonderful job. From Brazil.
He
spoke to him this morning. And just a very... complimentary call. He's working very hard. He's got a problem with the virus. Got a big problem. And he's, we talked about it today at length. We had a call this morning. And Brazil is shut down, as you know. They weren't going to shut it down, but they had to. So Brazil is shut down. The world is shut down. Nobody's ever seen anything like this. The entire world is shut down. You go from having the most powerful economy in the world and from other countries that are doing well to being everything is shut down. It's very sad, but we're going to get it going, and we're going to be stronger than ever. I really believe that. We're going to be stronger. We're going to have a big bounce, a very big bounce when this is gone. And I just want to thank the American people. I want to thank these great professionals, and I want to thank the media, because really, for the most part, the media has been very fair. Thank you very much, everybody.
That was President Donald Trump live at the White House for his daily coronavirus task force press briefing, going over a number of issues, starting with making sure that drug cartels in Mexico understand that they shouldn't be taking advantage of this time. The president is making sure that we're remaining on high alert to handle that. And of course, we went over the new guidance coming from the president, or potential new guidance coming from the president, in the form of some kind of potential restriction on a route by route basis on domestic travel due to the hot spots that are still there. So what he's most likely talking about are spots in New York, Louisiana, potentially, of course, here in Washington. A lot of stuff to get to in this extended edition of What's Trending, brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Prisoners across the state are being released. Suspects are not being booked, all over concerns about the coronavirus spreading within our prisons. But how bad is it becoming? Now it seems like it's becoming a public safety concern. Joining me on the line is Mill Creek Councilmember Vincent Cavallari. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into this, it's important to note for folks at home, Vincent is a member of the Snohomish County Sheriff's Department. He is not speaking on their behalf. He's speaking exclusively right now as a council member. And as a council member, what can you tell us about the situation right now in Snohomish County as far as the release of these prisoners goes?
Well, thanks for that disclaimer at the top, Jason, number one. Things are going fairly well. There has been a plan executed here at the county level that is essentially going flawless. I don't think any of us anticipated the mass releases and the level of these folks being released back into the community, though. That is one of the things that I hope doesn't come back to haunt us, but I have a feeling it will.
Take us through just give us some context. How many people are actually being released?
So this is public information. We've reduced the jail population by about 50% thus far. Attorneys have been arguing in front of judges that essentially staff were bringing the virus into the jail, or somehow that they were more in harm's way because they're in custody. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. This is kind of a way to execute their mindset or philosophy that the criminal justice system is biased and or racist.
So have you had instances of prisons there or deputies there or staff members there bringing coronavirus into the buildings?
Thankfully, no. We have not had to deal with that yet. However, we do have our first reported case here at the county jail. The jail has, and that information just became public this morning. The jail itself has really set up a process that, like I said, has been executed flawlessly. Our sheriff, Adam Fortney, has allowed his command staff to just simply roll out a process which puts a very high level into the process, as well as a redundancy mechanism to make sure that everything's being followed mm-hmm. through. Our first case that came back was booked in on March 25th, I believe, is the date, and we just got the results back yesterday. So my hope is that somehow when we get these new test kits, that will certainly, a faster notification will certainly be helpful going forward.
Just joining me, we're talking with Mill Creek Councilmember Vincent Cavallari. We're talking about prisoners being released in Snohomish County. Snohomish County is not unlike any other county in Washington State and lots of counties across the country in which officials are releasing certain criminals and refusing to book other criminals all over the coronavirus crisis. The concern being that they're going to bring the coronavirus into the prison population, which so far there certainly hasn't been any significant outbreaks. We've certainly seen stories here or there. When you see the release of these prisoners, what's the first thing that goes through your head from a public safety perspective?
Well, I mean, I have a family and loved ones just like everybody else. The bottom line is this. There are people that are going to have to go to jail. Like it or not, we are going to have to take them at the door. Our goal at this point is to just receive them and intake them and contain them as safely and as effectively as possible. I worry especially about the aftermath of at some point the 50% of the population that's been released, they're going to have to be either booked back in, picked back up, rearrested for new crimes. We haven't even begun to see the scourge or the results of, some of these efforts.
Who is actually being, what kind of people are being released from jail?
You name it. It is a mixed bag from low level offenders to mid level to, in some cases, offenders who are guilty of, or been accused of weapons charges. People with long rap sheets, people with long records, people with high amounts of bail. We're talking hundreds of thousands, having it reduced to a few thousand.
Wow.
There's been a concerted effort to thin the herd, so to speak. And like I said, the jail is built to hold people. I understand that there's a mandate of reducing population, but at what lengths do we go to putting this off on the socialized society that's out there?
Councilmember, who's making these decisions?
Well, it's coming from the top. It's coming from the prosecuting attorney. It's coming from the public defender's office. And ideally, it ends up being the judges who are carrying out the releases. We all understand the risks. I mean, these are professional people that work on the streets, in the jails, for both the officers, the medical personnel. We know what we're doing here. We've begun a process and we've carried it out essentially flawlessly. Like I said, the containment on the one coronavirus case, this person never really saw the light of day. They essentially were booked in a jail through a very rigorous screening process. tested negative, it's my understanding, on the flu, and came back positive on corona some days later, but never had access to the population as a whole. They were segregated, and they are to this day.
Well, we wish you guys the best of luck. Obviously, we'll be paying close attention to this, not just in Snohomish County, but also King and Pierce counties and all across Washington State. We've been talking with Mill Creek Councilmember Vincent Cavallari. Thank you so much for returning to the show. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks again, Jason. God bless.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. When we come back, it's time for The Big Local right here on KTTH. Welcome back to The Jason Rance Show live on this Wednesday afternoon. Hospitals across the state are dealing with an influx of coronavirus cases, and it's keeping a lot of healthcare workers busy with wall-to-wall patients, so busy they're not really able to even eat in some circumstances. Coriel Martin and Patrick Halstead of the Herb Farm restaurant in Woodinville, they're actually stepping up to help. They're raising money on GoFundMe so they can deliver 4,000 multi-course meals to healthcare workers all across the Puget Sound area. In fact, just the other day, they delivered 90 meals personally to Evergreen Hospital. Carl joins me now. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So how exactly does this work?
So, and one thing I want to clarify is Patrick and I were both just volunteers out in the community, and we were really thinking about what can we do as people who, like, staying at home to help keep the rest of us safe, to help keep our healthcare system up? And there's also all these restaurants that we love in the Seattle area that are really losing a lot of business. And so our thought was, let's try to solicit donations from the community to buy meals to deliver to the hospitals. And Patrick had a great relationship with the Herb Farm. Mm-hmm. And so we started, our first raise was we raised $750 from our friends to do 35 meals. And then we have slowly escalated that up to the point where we have this GoFundMe, which just crossed 100K. we've delivered 3,000 meals so far. Wow. And this run rate gives us 3,000 meals. And we're trying to scale and grow it as quickly as we can.
Yeah, and what's interesting in all of this is, you know, all of us are trying to give back to our communities, give back to healthcare workers, give back to the businesses that we love. And this is one of those ways you can literally do all of that at once. If even if you have like $5 to give to a GoFundMe campaign, that $5 goes a long way. Not only are you helping a local business, but you're helping getting these meals to the hospital workers. How have they reacted, the healthcare workers?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I get these messages that just make me cry. We got this lovely message from a nurse at Overlake yesterday, and she said that she'd worked 17 consecutive night shifts without a break or a weekend, and she didn't have time to prepare a meal, so she came into work getting ready for having saltines and like vending machine cheese for dinner. And that timed with one of the meals from the Herb Farm. And she told the story about how the ingredients of the meal, like the nettle soup, it was a trout chowder that night. And the trout reminded her of fishing with her grandfather, which she can't see her grandfather right now because he's 84 and she's working with COVID-19 patients. And the herbs in the salad reminded her of spending time in the herb garden with her grandmother. And she can't see her grandmother either. And so it was this just wonderful story of we fed her this like really nutritious, healthy meal. And we gave her this sort of emotional connection with her family as part of her break.
And if you want to... If folks, by the way, want to donate directly to this GoFundMe, all you have to do right now is text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-877. I'll go ahead and send you a link directly to this GoFundMe page. Again, if you've got $5 to give, awesome. If you've got $50, great. If you've got $500, oh my gosh, even better. Again, text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-877. 8770. We're talking with Carl Coryell Martin. He is working alongside his cohort in all of this, Patrick, in delivering these meals to hospitals all across the Puget Sound region. How are you picking the hospitals? Is it just kind of just going down the list?
We've been going down the list, and I'm actually really excited. We're delivering to Harborview for the first time tomorrow. I'm going to be making that delivery myself. So I'm going to the herb farm and picking up 80 meals tomorrow night around dinner time and bringing that to their night shift. And one of the things is, you know, the herb farm has done a lot of work engaging with the hospitals to understand what they need to know how to safely prepare food and be confident that the food that they're receiving is not going to make their staff sick. Like, that is really key. We started with Evergreen and Overlake, which are both in Kirkland and very close to the early mm-hmm. outbreaks. And then we just started calling the hospitals and saying, hey, can I talk to the incident command center around arranging a food delivery? And built relationships with some of the Kaiser Permanente hospitals, two Swedish locations, and a couple of others.
Well, that's fantastic. Again, folks are texting in now. Again, text DONATE to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link so you can contribute to this pretty amazing cause. Again, not only does it help to give nutritious meals to healthcare workers who are on the front lines of this fight over the coronavirus, but, of course, it also helps out a local restaurant, and we're all about that. I'll give you the last word. I know you're trying to raise just a few more $1,000 for about 1,000 more meals. I'm assuming if you get even more money, you're going to continue this. I'll let you make the last pitch.
I mean, I'm just very grateful. We're really excited that we also are supporting local suppliers mm-hmm. and working with local food raisers. There's also a national effort called frontlinefoods.org, which we are joining forces with. That should be ready in a couple of days. And thinking about how we coordinate and support our entire nation's healthcare systems and not just the region, and thinking about how we can work with more hospitals. I want to feed every healthcare worker dinner every night for them and their family. We're a long way from that, but like, just can we take this concern about how are we going to eat off of their minds so they can focus on keeping us safe is my priority.
Love it. Again, text the keyword DONATE to 1-800-465-8770. We've been talking with Carl Coryell Martin. Carl, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jace Rancho. Again, text the keyword DONATE to 1-800-465-8770. I like issues like this or these kinds of GoFundMe pages. We've been doing our best to go out and find the ones that have been listed to do the most good in our communities. Because I know, look, we're getting bombarded literally every single day with some despairing news, right? Some concerning news. The numbers continuing to go up, although we're starting to, we believe we're going to, at least here in Washington State, continue to see this flattening of the curve. But when you go and look at the news out of New York, when you look at this new data point that's come up that 25% of people with coronavirus don't even have symptoms, it could bring people down. And with that uncertainty that we have going on right now about the stay-at-home order, we need to focus on some of these ways that we can help in the community and bring some good. And I'm thinking just about these individual healthcare workers, the nurses, the doctors, the technicians who are not able to have any sort of healthy meal during any of this time or even a good meal. And then all of a sudden we're saying, oh, you know what? We're going to deliver to you today. I absolutely love that. So again, text DONATE to 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, just days after that ER doctor out in Bellingham says he was fired from Peace Health St. Joseph Medical Center. Fired after he was complaining, he came forward saying, look, we've got some unsafe conditions here as we're dealing with the coronavirus. Our health is at risk. The patients are at risk. Well, now we're starting to hear from the nurses. The doctor originally spoke with Q13. His name is Dr. Ming Lin. And now nurses are coming up and they're saying, look, I back him. What he said is happening in our hospitals is 100% truth. And we don't want to bring down this hospital, we want to shine a spotlight so we can change things. because there are nurses like this one who wanted to have his or her voice changed because he or she fears retribution. They're worrying about their own safety.
We have less than adequate gear to protect us as well as our patients. It's very hard to perform your job in a loving, caring manner, knowing that at any point in time you could be contaminating yourself. Every time I go to work, I think, is today the day that I'm going to get exposed to a COVID patient without knowing?
I mean, think about that. And she or he still continues to show up to work each and every day knowing that they could be infecting themselves. And we know that most people who get the coronavirus are going to end up being okay, but they have families that they're returning to. Potentially older individuals who they are with, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a mother, a father, someone maybe who's immunocompromised. And so they're in a position where they're still showing up to work and they're just trying to shine a spotlight on this stuff.
I would do it again every single day if I had to, just to keep myself safe.
She's buying her own equipment. Nancy is another nurse at St. Joseph's. She's happy to go on the record. She tells Q13, any sign of support for healthcare workers now, more than ever, is so incredibly appreciated.
Especially cards, because the staff can't have visitors right now. And especially those that do have COVID and that end up passing away by themselves. You know, we are the ones that hold their hands as they take their last breath. And that's very difficult, you know, to take home because we will carry that forever.
So last week when we did something similar to the guest we just had on, we focused on Joe Chocolate Company. It's based out of Seattle. It's basically coffee infused into chocolate. And for $54, people were able to purchase, and you're still able to purchase at joechocolateco.com, a big box of this chocolate that you can pick from a drop-down menu of hospitals in the region. Just have them sent over there. So you're doing good for that business, but also sending a treat over to the hospitals. Producer Peyton, do you remember the one thing that really pissed me off about that story?
Well, everything pisses you off.
Say it was the commenter who was a nurse.
Oh yeah, there was the nurse who didn't like you.
There was a nasty nurse who went onto my blog because we wrote about this, and she said, please don't do that. We don't need chocolate. That's just filled with sugar and it's gonna make us sick. And I saw that and I'm like, you're just nasty. Why would you do that? A good faith attempt to throw some chocolate your way because we understand what you're going through just as a little bit of a treat. Because not all of us have access to personal protective equipment to send your way. And for her to get on our face or our KTTH.com blog and start to complain about it, I was really down. And then Nancy said this.
We're scared, and this is a very scary time, and people are dying. They're losing their lives. People are getting fired for speaking out, and I'm not here to speak out against my hospital by any means. I'm only here to speak out to the community and to rally support that we need.
So let's support them in all different ways by shining a spotlight on this huge issue, but also sending them some treats. So you can text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to the GoFundMe page for our previous guests. Or, of course, you can also go to joechocolateco.com. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. We are live on location. In an underground bunker. Well, it's not underground. It's not a bunker. It's my apartment. We are broadcasting from outside of the station today because we're trying to practice what we preach, which is simply saying, hey, if you can stay at home, stay at home. And good news is I get to stay at home. Bad news is I get to take over KTTH at any point that I want to. So if in the middle of the night I wake up and maybe I took some Ambien and I'm kind of like wandering around in that Ambien stupor, I might just turn on the show and take over KTTH. So that should be fun. That's why you should always listen to KTTH, whether it's on your smart speaker like an Amazon Echo and Google Home, or of course on the KTTH smartphone app. So there's a little bit of controversy coming out of the Red Cross. We know that healthcare workers need these masks. We know that. We know that it is an essential part of their job. These are people who are with patients who have a high likelihood of having the coronavirus. They need to be protected. Mark Auerbach, talking with King 5, he's a campaigns manager for Local 21. They represent 17,000 healthcare workers in the state. he notes how deeply important they are.
It's the most difficult item to source right now, and absolutely critical to the safety of our members when they're on the front line.
So we very clearly have that urgent need. And while we have that need, it appears that the Red Cross might be hoarding a whole bunch of masks. And actually, I shouldn't say might. It would appear that they're admitting that they're hanging on to masks. And they won't tell us exactly how many they have. Chris Ingalls over at King 5 says that the Northwest region of the American Red Cross will not say how many surplus medical masks it has in storage. It comes after 50,000 medical masks were found at the Red Cross in Stockton, California. They were there stored in a warehouse. And they refused to release these masks because they said, hey, look, we might need it for future emergency shelters. We might actually need this. Now, in Washington, the leadership here at the Red Cross, they're acknowledging that they have, quote, a limited stockpile of PPE in order to maintain its readiness to respond to disasters across the country. Are we not in a disaster right now? Are we not in the middle of a public health crisis? Should we not actually have Red Cross doing what I thought our money to the Red Cross was supposed to do, which was to help us during a public health crisis? I understand the need to say, hey, we might have additional need for these masks at some point because we could have another tragedy. We could have another disaster. I mean, I suppose that's right. But couldn't you then justify never giving out anything during any crisis because you can say, well, we might have another one coming? It's absolutely ridiculous.
I don't really feel comfortable weighing in on the Red Cross, but what I will say is this. We've been working at every level, leaving no stone unturned to try to get the equipment that frontline healthcare workers and first responders need.
It is outrageous that they won't allow us to get access to at least the numbers, which indicates to me that it's probably high. They should be releasing these masks. We know that masks right now are being put into production because a lot of companies have decided to step up. And they're creating these masks. So why not give them out now where there is an urgent need and then restock once all of the shipments end up coming in? It's not going to be that long. We had MyPillow a couple days ago coming out there and saying, yeah, we're going to put out some of this stuff. You have all of these companies out there, Eddie Bauer in Bellevue. You can't give up some of these masks? Absolutely outrageous. And you know what? People assume that because you've got this big organization, they've got really good branding, and of course they're in the nonprofit world, so they're always doing the right thing. Well, sometimes they don't do the right thing. And this doesn't seem like they're doing the right thing. And there are a lot of much, much, much better nonprofit organizations out there that you should consider giving money to, because something like this, to me, acknowledging that you've got the mask, you're not going to tell us how many, mostly because it's probably a bad PR move, you're going to hang on to that? That tells me they should not be trusted. Speaking of masks, we're having this big debate as to whether or not you should be wearing a mask. We now know, like I said, 25% of the cases of coronavirus are asymptomatic. That's new information coming, including coming from a doctor locally, Judith Malmgren, with the UW Department of Epidemiology.
When we started the epidemic, everyone was told low risk, low risk, low risk. Well, clearly it's not low risk.
It's no longer low risk. She's there speaking with Como. So this begs the question. Should you wear a mask or not? Because we're getting some different guidance. Federally, we're getting pretty consistent guidance, which is not to. You don't need to wear these masks for the most part, and they give it out with a reason. They're not available to healthcare workers who need them more than you do, so you shouldn't be taking up the stock. And in a lot of cases, it's not even necessary. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. If all you're doing, you're staying indoors the entire time, and maybe you're going on one walk with your dog a couple times a day, and you're not having any impact with any interaction with anybody else, you don't actually need that mask. It's not really going to do you any good. It doesn't mean that a mask can't help you. It can. Obviously, it doesn't offer complete protection, but it offers you some. Dr. Peter Rabinowitz over at the UW spoke to Como TV.
Even though many of them don't provide that much protection, they probably provide a little bit of protection, and that's not a bad thing.
So he's saying, look, it doesn't provide the best of protection in the world. It's not foolproof. And a lot of folks don't like the idea. This is not a good argument, I don't think. But you've heard some of the arguments, including coming from the Surgeon General, saying, you know what? People who wear these masks will think that now they're invincible when they're clearly not, because it has to be perfectly fitted and all these things. And yes, he's right for some people. I think most people acknowledge that you're not going to completely change your behavior as a result of wearing these masks. But it is true that it can do more good than bad, except in the context of keeping these pieces of equipment from healthcare professionals who 100% need them and know how to wear them better than you do. And so if you're getting these conflicting messages, which is, yeah, they can help you, but you should save them for the healthcare workers, what can you do? Well, Rabinowitz is all like, hey, why don't you make them yourself?
The fact that there is now much more community transmission going on really makes us, I think, want to reevaluate that.
So why don't you make them yourself? You're the president today during the press briefing suggests that you use a scarf or a bandana, that could also help. And it's very similar. It's not the same, obviously. And it's not going to give you the same coverage as a mask would if you're wearing it properly. But I mean, people really need to think about this. I saw someone yesterday on the drive home who was literally, that's why I keep using that example, just walking her dog. Now I've seen her a couple times around the studio, just walking her dog, and she's got a mask on. Now, it's certainly possible that she is in one of those groups that is immunocompromised because she seemed like she was a young woman. But is it really necessary for folks to do that? Not really. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. I really do appreciate you tuning in. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. When we come back, we're going to get into some of the new data that's coming in. We're going to see how the media is still playing the blame game. And we're going to take a dive into another way that you can help a struggling business out in Kingston. We are making a point to check in with communities all across the state of Washington during this coronavirus crisis. We're going to get to that and so much more. You've been listening to The Jason Rant Show.